The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Welcome to the Music Room here on WVUD. I'm Mando Richard, and tonight we've got an interview we did back on November 3rd of 2013 with Walt Kochan and Claire Milliner, two fine musicians from up in the Oxford, Pennsylvania area. And they came down to talk with us and play a little bit of music from the Milliner Kochan Collection of American Fiddle Tunes, a book they put out about 2 years ago. It's a tremendous addition to scholarship in traditional fiddle music, and also great for people who want to enjoy the music and just play it. So please stay tuned as we welcome Claire Milliner and Walt Kochan to the Music Room here on WVUD.
Claire Milliner and Walt Kochan, thanks for joining us.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Now, one of the main reasons we want you in here, besides the fact you're two of the best old-time musicians within 150 miles of the studio, is that you have put out a collection of American fiddle tunes that I think a lot of people should hear about.
This collection is just a labor of love that we started a long, long time ago, and it's just a way of preserving these wonderful tunes. I don't know how much credit we can take for it, except that we transcribed them and put them all together in this one book.
You had, what, like 1,500 or so pieces of paper where you jotted down things when you'd hear people play? And
well, when I was young, I remembered tunes by writing them down. That was just the best way I could remember them. So I wrote down a lot of tunes, and by the time Walt and I got together, which is 12 years ago now, I had 10 manuscript books full of these old-time tunes. So, you know, we got the idea, why don't we put them in a book? Why don't we publish them?
Yeah, it seemed like a real resource. And so we started looking looking for some way to do it, some funding for it, and we applied to the National Endowment for the Arts twice.
We didn't get very far with that. We were rejected both times. So we decided that we would just print it on our own, and it really has turned out to be fine because we ended up with this beautiful big book. It's about 9 inches by 13 inches and weighs 6.5 pounds.
I'm holding up next to the microphone so people can see it. Here, folks, you see it, the Milliner Kochan Collection of American Fiddle Tunes.
Nice blue cover with gold printing, with a little red ribbon hanging out. But the most wonderful thing about it is you open it up and it's like you have a book of spells. You have the actual notes that these old timers played in the original recordings. But more than that, you have details about their lives, when they were born, if they died, what year they died, and a little bit about them. You got some pretty surprising stories in there. Plus, you have several indexes that list the tunes alphabetically and list the tunes by key and by tuning, and also list the exact recording that we used to transcribe.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of the development of this project was Claire's transcriptions were mostly from tapes that she made in sessions at festivals, at least a lot of them, I think. And so, you know, I suggested, well, why don't we go back to the original source recordings for these very tunes and edit these transcriptions to reflect those melodies.
Now, you'd be really surprised how tunes change when somebody hears it played at a festival and they, you know, there are a lot of people playing and it, you kind of don't hear quite all the notes, and then you go home and you try to play it yourself, and you show it to somebody else, and they play it a little differently, and the tune can morph then into something that doesn't quite reflect the way it was originally played by Marcus Martin or Luther Strong or Eden Hammonds or Arthur Smith. So, and we call that version the festival version. It might lose some of the notes. It might lose some of the quirky timing. And so what we found in most cases is that the original tunes are a lot more interesting. There are things in there that might have been lost.
So it's sort of like the details get smoothed over as 12 fiddlers are all playing it together at Clifftop.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the festival versions are part of the folk process, which is the best part of it all, really. But so what we wanted to do was just to make sure that these original melodies were
captured
on paper, because we have collections from 150 years ago on paper, but who knows how long the actual recordings will last.
We've had people say, well, you know, you can get all these recordings on the computer and you've got CDs and all of that. Why do you need a book? Why have it in book form? And my thought about that is it's another media, it's another medium of preserving the tunes. But more than that, things that are written down tend to have lasted a long, long time. How do you know what medieval music sounded like? The only way you know that is that somebody bothered to write down the notation at some point. If the electricity goes out, if your computer blows up, if you don't have a CD player, you can still open the book and there's the tune.
I know I've got tapes from the 70s that I used to make at festivals, and they are turning to ruination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of our CDs are actually...
Some of the CDs, too.
Yeah.
Samuel Baird, when he went off and started collecting in 1928, his concern was, oh my God, the commercial recordings and radio are starting to go out, and I really want to preserve what the music of Southwest Pennsylvania sounds like before all these other influences come in. Well, looking at my wristwatch, we're in November of 2013. I mean, I think that train has left the station. I mean, how did you go back and find source material?
There are a lot of different places to find it. There are Library of Congress recordings. They're kind of hard to get your hands on.
You have to go to D.C. to get them?
No. If you try to do that, it costs an arm and a leg for all of the research and everything. Most of the recordings, sadly enough, are sent around by bootleg versions that people have recorded over the years and passed around from person to person. I think it costs $100 an hour to get recordings out of the Library of Congress. Of course, there are some of the most wonderful recordings ever. A lot of Alan Lomax's stuff is in there. But other than that, there are field recordings that people made in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. Bruce Green made a lot of field recordings in Kentucky in the 70s. We have John Sharp, because Sergeant Alvin York, who was probably the most celebrated soldier of World War I, was a friend of John Sharp's and recorded him in the 40s. That's why we have his tunes.
A lot of these recordings were commercial country music recordings from the 1920s. Now, that whole industry took a beating when the Depression happened, but it was a very, very popular form, and there were a lot of people that came down from the hills and recorded. This is our glimpse of what music was like before the advent of recordings. So a lot of these fiddlers were born before 1900 and were recorded in the 20s and 30s and 40s. And so it's a real glimpse of what it might have been like.
Because it is, of course, recorded, and then you're transcribing, but it's still pretty close to the source.
Yes.
It's not like listening to Western swing music recorded in the 1940s, and you can hear New York's influence.
Yeah.
You know?
That's an important point, because in the 20s, it's before the influence of a lot of radio. I mean, radio was starting to take off, but these guys that came down from the hills in the 20s, a lot of them had not been influenced by that.
Yeah.
We've been talking for quite a while now, Walt and Claire. You guys want to play something for the folks?
Yeah, I think we'd like to play a tune from Luther Strong. By the way, 1937 when Alan Lomax went to look for Luther Strong, he was in jail. Lomax had to bail him out. He was in jail for drinking, you know, the night before, and his daughter was a little embarrassed to tell Lomax that that's where he was. But Lomax, to his credit, went down to Hazard, Kentucky, into the county seat there, and bailed him out of jail. And Luther straight away ordered Lomax to go out and get a pint of whiskey so that he could start playing. And he recorded a lot of the classic old-time tunes. We're going to play one of them. It's called The Hog Went Through the Fence, Yoke and All. Now, listen carefully here, because it's going to sound out of tune. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be.
On the banjo and Claire Milner on the fiddle, channeling Luther Strong from Hazard, Kentucky. Is that one in the book?
Yes.
That's in the book.
But that story is not. That's what I'd like to sort of add when we do our second edition of the book. And, you know, we're just about sold out of the first edition. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, fixing some typos and that kind of stuff, but also adding to the bios.
We're talking about the Milner Cokin Collection of American Fiddle Tunes, which you all published, I think, about 2 years ago, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it's available from Mud Thumper Music. How do they find it, Walt?
Well, you can go to mudthumper.com, and there's a link there that also goes to mkfiddletunes.com, and that's actually the warehouse that does the order fulfilling right here in Newark.
So it's mudthumper.com?
Mm-hmm.
And then follow the link to
MK Fiddle Tunes.
I think this is such an impressive project. I mean, it's not the only one that's come out in America, mm-hmm. but this is, you know, hundreds of versions of tunes that are out there floating around. Now, you chose mostly from Appalachia, but you've got things from all across the country.
They're from all over. There's even a few Canadian tunes in there. I guess the most tunes are from Kentucky, West Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, that area, simply because that's where a lot of the old-time music was from. But Missouri is pretty well represented as well, and even California, Arizona, and Nebraska. So
I think it sort of reflects the tunes that we know and that which includes a lot of the fiddle tunes that the old-time music community play, and that's mostly Appalachian. But there's some interest in Canadian music, all kinds of fiddle music. So, you know, if I hear a good tune, I'll try to learn it. And so some of them, and same with Claire, and so a lot of those got incorporated into the mix.
Yeah. the criteria, I guess, for including a tune over the years was if I heard somebody play it, I'd go and look it up and try to find out where it came from and then transcribe it.
You guys have tried to do this a lot as folklorists, well, not just as musicians. I mean, you're trying to preserve a heritage.
That's our goal, but we are not trained folklorists. I guess I should make that pretty clear. We did this as musicians. What we did was find the recordings and transcribe them, but we haven't done a study of anything.
Well, Claire is an excellent researcher, and she did a lot of research on the biographical information that's included in the book.
Well, that's true, but in the book, there isn't much that we created ourselves. What we did was just listen to the tune and write down the exact notes. I didn't try to put in bowings that I think the fiddler was doing or anything like that, or chords, because a lot of times you can't tell what chord it's supposed to be. So there's, you know, we didn't edit anything or create anything. We just wrote down the exact notes that he played, and that's the preservation. It's just a slice of how this tune was played on this particular occasion by this particular fiddler.
So not looking for trends, but just trying to preserve these tunes that you've been hearing for years and that you've been able to trace back to some of the earliest recordings.
Exactly. It's a real slice of American folklore, and we're glad we did it. We wish that every library had a copy. And in fact, that's one of our shortcomings, is that we're not really in the book business. We're not really very good marketers. So if anybody has any good ideas for how to make this available to libraries, we'd welcome that information. Maybe you can get a hold of us through the Mud Thumper website or whatever.
Now, one of the things that, Claire, you keep saying, you know, you're jotting down the notes. This is how it was played on this day. I know, like, O'Neill's Thousand Fiddle Tunes of Ireland and the Fiddler's Fake Book and all these other things that are floating around. It's pretty clear that these are sort of, well, if you will, festival versions of some of these songs. I mean, they're transcribed, if you will, very straight and not played exactly the way any one individual might have played them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I would make that judgment. O'Neill's, I'm sure, heard those tunes and wrote them down as accurately as he could. What Walt and I really tried to do is write down the exact notes. And I tell you, we had to go back over and over and over it. And I would write it down. He'd put it in the computer. I'd get it back. I'd put on the earphones, listen to it again. And, maybe that note's a little different. I mean, it's not that easy sometimes to hear exactly what the fiddler is playing. But that's really what we tried to do. And I think we did, you know, going back and listening to the recordings now and comparing them, I think we did a pretty good job. So in that way, this book might be a little different than some of the others that are out there, because that was our focus. We really wanted to be as accurate as we possibly could.
I think that you've got a section at the beginning that talks about using the book and the notation and all, but it seems that you have gone further towards trying to capture the way it was actually played than some of these other collections, where there's a long section about, well, this is how it's written, but here's the kind of ornaments that a fiddler would put in.
We tried to put in the ornamentation and
to actually notate it.
Actually notate it, and you'll see it in the form of triplets or grace notes or something in the tunes. You can't put everything in, though. I mean,
it's funny. Some fiddlers played a different variation every time through.
Right.
But some fiddlers played it exactly the same every time through. And some fiddlers played single string, single note melodies. And some players had a flat bridge and played two or three strings at once. And we did not usually put in the any of the double stops. We leave that up to the player, the listener, the reader, whatever. But you can hear these recordings. Somebody put them up on a website. That's at slipperyhill.com.
Yeah, good old Larry Warren, you know, he put them up. He got the original recordings that we used in order to transcribe, and he put them up on his website. So you can actually hear the recordings.
As written here.
As written, as what's written in the book, exactly. It's the exact recordings, you know, as so far as I've been able to check on them.
And his website, again, was?
SlipperyHill.com.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out.
And there's a page, when you go to the main page, there's a link to his Milliner Cogan collection.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's actually come up with the original recordings for R.P. Christensen's books.
He found those?
Yeah, he got those. The Baird's books, some of those recordings are in there. It's unbelievable what he's come up with. Yeah. So it's well worth checking out that site. He's done this all out of just a labor of love, you know, but it probably takes something to keep that website up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Might be nice to contribute to that.
Well, you're part of, if you will, sort of the second generation of old-time players, you know, the ones that rediscovered this music in the 60s. Why did it suddenly appeal to so many people?
Well, it's folk music. It's something that you can play at home. And something that a lot of people can play. You don't have to be a professional musician or a virtuoso to enjoy playing it. And a lot of people enjoy listening to it. And it is dance music for the most part. The fiddle tunes, especially, are pretty much dance tunes. So there's that element too. There's something about it. Just grab me. Like Claire says, she thinks that these tunes are spells. And in a way, they do captivate. They do capture you. So,
Walt has told me that when the Highwoods went around and played in different places, when they would come back through, they didn't have a bigger audience. They had more people that could play the tunes.
This is back in the days of the Highwood String Band.
Yeah.
Right. Enough talk. How's about some more music out of you, too?
Yeah. Let's do that old Ed and Hammond's tune, The Falls of Richmond.
All right, that sounds good.
Where's he from?
He's from West Virginia. He's from Marlinton, West Virginia. The Hammond's family apparently had to move around a little bit. They went from Kentucky to West Virginia. They didn't live a very fancy lifestyle. Eden, you know, basically made his living just farming and hunting. And the story goes that he married and... His wife said, you know, if you don't stop sitting around and just playing that fiddle all day, I'm leaving. And he said to her, on my honor, I'll put my fiddle down for no woman. So she left, and he got married again, and that was very happy. He was able to play his fiddle a lot and, I guess, make a little moonshine, whatever. Ed Hammond is one of my favorite fiddlers. This tune is... The Falls of Richmond. Thank you.
channeling West Virginia, the Falls of Richmond, played for you there by Claire Milner on the fiddle and Walt Kochan on the banjo. Well, we've probably got time for just another comment or two, and then I think we've got a song from one of your CDs you picked out for us to play. What else should we tell the folks about the Milner Kochan collection of American fiddle tunes available from Mudthumper Music at mudthumper.com?
Well, like Uncle Dave Macon said, now, folks, buy this record. It's a good one. On the book.
So. Well, what I'd say is it's the first edition is going fast. There are a few left, and as soon as that's gone, we're going to create a second edition, which will be, you know, bigger and better. But if you want the collector's item, get this one now.
Well, it's a tremendous resource, and on behalf of folk musicians and old-time musicians all across the country, thank you both for putting it together.
Well, thanks, Richard, for having us.
It's been great.
As you were packing up your instruments, I think we picked out something from your Just Tunes CD to play. Hogs and Sheep Going to the Pasture. Tell us the story of that one.
Well, this is from Ed and Hammond's nephew, Burl Hammonds. And it's funny because even though they were in the same family, Burl plays the very same tunes as Ed and Hammonds, but plays them completely differently. So you have to wonder what was going on there. But anyway, this is a great version of this tune from Burl Hammonds.
And here comes Hogs and Sheep Going to the Pasture, played by Walt Kochan and Claire Milner from their CD, Just Tunes.
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. That's sites, S-I-T-E-S, dot UDEL, U-D-E-L, dot E-D-U, slash TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.